For those of us who are experiencing Tisha B'Av in the way that it should be experienced, a sense of real mourning, a sense of loss, and Kal V'Chomer, even more so for those in this room, unfortunately probably most of us here, who have lost a loved one, who've experienced real mourning, the Avelut Yachid, the Avelut Chadasha, the immediate mourning. We know that there's a very fine line between mourning, recalling, trying to learn the lessons of the loss that we have, and despair. It's a very fine line. The Gemara, in fact, warns us many times that a person shouldn't cry too much, that a person who over-mourns is destined to lose even more. And the Gemara tells some very radical stories. I'm not sure if they are meant to be taken literally, about people who mourn, the mother who lost 7 children because she mourned so much. But we all know that there is that fine line there, that if we do too much, we can get into despair or depression. And that's not what the Torah wants from us. Perhaps we shouldn't be over-happy, to the over-exaggerated happiness, but obviously by the same token, we shouldn't be depressed. That's not the way. We'll get to in a few moments, in fact, the Rambam, but just to foreshadow that, the Rambam, of course, talks about the fact that we're supposed to find the middle road when it comes to our characteristics, not being over-exaggerated on one side or the other, except for 2 traits, which we'll get to. And when we look, when we think about Tisha B'Av, the fact that we're here today, that this program that my brothers organized has been going on for probably 15 or 20 years, you have programs all around the world, people in the 3 weeks talking about Tisha B'Av and what we've lost, and the fact that basically every Dvar Torah that's given around the world for the last probably a couple thousand years has ended invariably with Ad Biyat HaGoel, that we look forward to the Beit HaMikdash being rebuilt. And at some point we can literally throw up our hands and say, do we really mean this though? Are these just words that we just say? How many of us really mean that? How many of us really want to see the Beit HaMikdash? And even more importantly, what are we doing to bring it back, to see Yerushalayim rebuilt? And if you look around in the last little bit, and we felt it more significantly in the last few weeks, but the truth is we've had problems for many, many years. If you look at Orthodoxy, if you look at Judaism, it can be very depressing. Scandal after scandal, people who should know better. You know, perhaps, yes, you know, rabbis are human beings. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechata. That none of us are perfect, except for 4 people, the Gemara says, that we're actually never sinned. But, yeah, we all make mistakes. But people who should be leaders don't seem to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. And in fact, this goes back to the Gemara. This is not a new phenomenon. The whole reason we have Tisha B'Av, according to the Gemara and Gittin, is that the genesis of the destruction of the Temple of Yerushalayim was the fact that you had Bar Kamsa, who was given a wrong invitation, who went to this dinner party and was thrown out, even though he said, I'll pay for it. I'll just don't embarrass me. And of course, he was thrown out, as is well known, but the most important part of the story, I think, is the message that Bar Kamsa takes, which is, Hoel, v'havu yate rabban, v'lo michu be'shma mina, t'kanechale lehu. That Bar Kamsa looks at these rabbis who were there, these leaders, who were supposed to be given the religious messages of guidance of the Jewish people. They sat there, they didn't say anything, they could have said something, must be that they agree with this. And therefore, Bar Kamsa, that doesn't mean that Bar Kamsa was a tzaddik in doing what he went to do afterwards. That doesn't mean that, that shouldn't justify that he created this whole ruse to get the Romans to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, to think that the Jews were rebelling. But nevertheless, he's not the one that's really taken to task. The rabbis are, other rabbis that Gemara mentions. So this could push us over the top, standing here in the year 2009, when we look around the situation, we could easily get into despair. We say these words over and over again. And what are we doing about it? What lessons are we learning to change the tide, to show what Judaism really is, to show what the Parsha this past week talks about, the idea of creating a just society, the idea of not being scared of people being scared only of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and doing the proper thing. So what exactly are we doing? Those who've gone through an avelut, the yachid, right, who've lost a loved one, know that, and this is, as many of you know, my family is going through this, is going through this right now. You know that at Shiva and during the year, and Shloshim and during the year, and for years afterwards, again, I can't speak for other people, but I would think our experience is reflective of other people's. The most beautiful thing you can hear about a parent, a sibling, whatever the case is the Shem Tov that the person have, the good name. It's not as important that they were great intellectuals or that they were extremely successful in business or whatever the case is. Those are nice things. They're very important things. But at the end of the day, we want a person to have a Shem Tov. Shem Tov, Mishem Tov, the idea of having a good name. That's really the hallmark of a Jew. And that's all I think, every person in this room wants to be remembered. After 120 years, you have a good name. That people will say that name, oh, bring a smile to the person's face. That person was a nice person. This person did kind things to me. And if this is true on an individual level, it should surely be true on a collective level, that the Jewish people needs to have a Shem Tov. That when people think about the Jews, Rabbi Goldreich talked a little bit about this at the end, that people, when they think about the Jewish people, that's what the Gemara says, in fact. And when somebody talks about a Jew, a person should say, I want to be like that Jew. I want to be like that person. That's the greatest Kiddush Hashem that we have. So if that's the case, and the case that Tisha B'Av, as the Rambam and others point out, you've probably heard this today, and you probably know this on your own, that the whole purpose of a fast day is to do tshuva. That if we just sit around and bang our hearts and do the external aspects, but we don't change, we don't think how we can be better, and realizing that every single individual here is an olam mala, is a complete world, and collectively we do have tremendous power. When we get into despair, what can I do? I'm bothered by this or that, but what can I do? I'm just an individual. So we have to think, how can we do tshuva on this? How can we try to get on the path to bring the Beit HaMikdash back, to bring Yerushalayim back, to bring the Jewish people back, the glory, the tiferet of the Jewish people? And I think if we ask ourselves honestly, right now, are we better off than we were a year ago, or 10 years ago, or 50 years ago, 100 years ago? I'm not sure that the answer is yes. I don't know. Everybody, that's a subjective answer that people will have. We have the land of Israel now, thank God. There are some beautiful things, but are we closer to creating that beautiful society that will bring the Yerushalayim Shalmala to connect to the Yerushalayim Shalmata, to bring the physical and spiritual Yerushalayim together? I'm not so convinced, and I'm not so convinced that we are going forward. So again, what can we do? I'm not sure if it was mentioned before, but perhaps many people are aware of what I think is the most important teaching that we can have on Tisha B'Av and really every day of the year. The truth is, if it was up to me, I would ensure that there were two pieces of literature that was put up into every shul, every Beit Midrash, every camp, and that people have read this every single day. The first is on more of an individual level, but obviously, as we mentioned, that can have a tremendous impact. That's the Igeret HaRamban, right? The letter that the Ramban wrote to his son and told him, you should go over this weekly, and many people have that custom to go over it weekly. And on more of a communal level, the Hakdama, the introduction of the Netziv to Sefer Bereishit, where he quotes the Gemara in Yuma that tells us that the Jewish people, my brother mentioned this last time also, or whenever it was, the other night, the idea that the Jewish people in time of the Beit HaMikdash, in time of Bayit Sheni, were tzaddikim. They were righteous people. They did a lot of wonderful acts of chesed. So why was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Going beyond what the Gemara says of Sinat Chinam, a basis hatred, the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin explains that the people all felt that it was only my way. Only I know the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know the way that God wants me to worship His Torah. And if somebody's a little different than me, you're a tzduki, you're not bikoris, you're beyond the pale. There's no such thing in these people's language of shivim panim la Torah, the 70 faces of Torah, or elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, the fact that there are many acceptable ways to delve into the Torah and to come up with different nuances, Yes, the black, the basis is going to be the same, but there's a lot of room for differences of opinion. In fact, that's just something I just mentioned, something I heard from Rav Lichtenstein, my Rosh Hashiva, the idea that when it comes to the Kohanim and their different begadim, their different clothes that they wear, we're told that the michne seibah, the undergarments that the Kohanim used to wear, there wasn't one size fit all. It depended what the size of the Kohen was. A Kohen who was 5'5" would obviously have smaller undergarments. A person who was 6'6" would have larger. You had to look at the individual and see what fit that individual. And the same is true when it comes to religious life as well. That as long as the basis is there, there is room for different expressions of religious value. But the bottom line that the Netziv really comes down to is the fact that there was a tremendous lacuna in the Bein Adam Lechavero, right? A people beyond their immediate area of action, beyond their immediate Dalet Amot, other people were outside the pale. And this, of course, he contrasts. Was this mentioned before, by the way? It's okay, good. No, because this should be, I think, the first message. And even if it was mentioned, it should be mentioned over and over again. That the fact that the Netziv says that this is in tremendous contrast, antithesis, the way that our avot, that our ancestors acted. The Netziv says about this generation, of Bayit Sheni, the second temple, that these were tzaddikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu eino savel tzaddikim kailu. God cannot tolerate these type of tzaddikim. So they're very meticulous in their own ways, but this tzaddikim could not be tolerated. They came to do bahaflaga in a sort of a metaphorically shvichut amin, murder, in a metaphorical way, because as we know, they're probably embarrassing people. And we see this in our society nowadays. Sometimes it's a little different. They get embarrassed. People embarrass them. You shouldn't go to all like that. And as we know, that's compared to murder. But this is in contrast to our avot, to our ancestors, of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Avraham, when given the knowledge from God that he was going to destroy Sodom, the people of Sodom, what did Avraham do? And I say this also as a, again, like all these words, and this isn't just a cliche, but it is true. Whenever we speak, we're speaking to ourselves also. If I were told, if I got a message that some den of iniquity, some immoral place was going to be destroyed, was going to be was going to be removed from this earth, I would be happy, I think. I'd be very happy. I think most of us would be very happy. And Avram, when given the piece of knowledge that Sodom was going to be destroyed, what did he do? He didn't even say, okay, pardon? He said, more than be reasonable, he went toe-to-toe with God. He said, you can't do this. What are you doing, God? Maybe there are 50 righteous people there. Maybe there are 40. Maybe there are 30. Until, really, there was no merit in that land. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes there is no merit in certain places. But Avram was not willing to just say, okay, I'm going to allow God to destroy this people. He was going to fight for them. And we know Sodom was the antithesis of everything Avram stood for. Avram stood for chesed, as well as many other things. Sodom stood for the antithesis of that. If a stranger came into their place, they would throw them out, and worse, as the Medrash goes into. These were terrible people, it seems. And Avram cared for these people. He cared, even though they were totally different to him. Similarly, you have Yitzchak. Yitzchak is able to deal with Avimelech, this foreign king. He knew how to deal with him. He had good relationship with him. And similarly, Yaakov. Yaakov was able to live with Laban. Laban, the Ramai. Laban, the cheater. Laban, who is, again, the paradigm of negativity, really. Somebody who's not Yashar, somebody who's a crooked person. And Yaakov knew how to deal with him for 20 years. So these people, as the Netziv says, they were Yesharim Bahalichat Olam. They knew how to get along on a day-to-day basis. And this is what made them our Avot. This is what made them, and the Imahot, right? I'm sure they went together. They each supported one another. They all knew how to deal. And that's the other Medrash, that the Nefesh Asher Asu V'Charan, the idea that Avram and Sarah both knew how to deal with people and to gather people, to be the Pied Pipers of leadership. And it was done, I'm sure, in a gentle way, in a kind way. And that's what made them the Avot. And that's why they're called Yashar. That's why Bereshit is called Sefer Yashar, the book of the straight, the book of the just. So clearly, if the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because people didn't care about anybody beyond their Dalet Amot, that they They couldn't find any merit in other people. That should teach us, first of all, one very important lesson. And this is really amplified by the Meshech Chochma as well. The Meshech Chochma, in a famous statement, talking about the Shirat Hayam, talking about the song as the Jews left Mitzrayim, as they went to the sea, tells us that God will forgive us when it comes to our sins between us and Him. There's a Medrash that says that in the generation of David HaMelech, David, who we know was the great tzaddik, the great misharer, the great poet of Israel, the great religious figure of the Jewish people, nevertheless, when he went to battle, and they were successful battles, right, he was able to conquer a lot of land, nevertheless, people died. Many people died in those battles. And yet, Achab, in the door of Achab, the generation of Achab, you say that word, people go, feh. Achab, he's considered a Rasha. He did some terrible things, as we know. And yet, in his generation, when people went to war, they didn't die. Whether nobody died, or there were much less casualties in the time of David. And the Meshech Chochma explains that in the time of David, so externally again, when it came to the Bein Adam Lamakom, right, the connection between man and God, so people did well. They were on a higher level on that, on the externals. But when it came to the internals of how they get along with other people, they were not so great. And therefore, people died during that time, as opposed to the door of Achav. So Achav, again, he was Oved Avodah Zarah, he worshipped idolatry. The connection between man and God was not very good, and yet because the people had achdut, they had more unity, so God was able to forgive the sins between himself and the people, and rewarded them, but not to the door of David. If people sin between each other, if they are less good on the Ben Adam Lechavero, God will not forgive us so easily. So we can often ask, and you hear people when they fight different fights within the Orthodox community and beyond, we're doing this L'Shem Shamayim, that the Pasuk says, Yirat Hashem Snot Ra, the Pasuk in Mishlei, that a person who really fears God hates evil, and this person is evil, that person is evil, this community is evil, that community is evil. And we're doing L'Shem Shamayim, right? So how do we answer that? How do we deal with this issue? So again, like I said, sometimes there are very few situations, you know, few and far between, where a whole people are terrible, where a whole people have no redeeming factors that would be considered ra, would be considered totally evil, that you have to go after these people. And this should be mentioned again in the Gemara that was mentioned before also, the Gemara that tells us in our door, in our time, that there's no, this is actually, the Chazon Ish says this. The Chazon Ish writes that in our generation, right, people say we're going after, these people are Rishayim. Right? The Chazon Ish says that in our generation, there is no such thing as a Rasha. There's nobody who could be considered pure evil. Why? Because in order to be considered evil, if you look at the Psukim, if you look at the verses in Kedoshim, which talks about evil, so it's predicated on the idea of tochacha, of giving reproof. It's only if a person is doing something wrong, and they are reproved, they're told, this is immoral, this is illegal what you're doing, it's irresponsible, how can you do this? And they explain it to them in a kind way where the person who's receiving the reproof knows that this person, the other person, is l'shem shamayim, is doing it for the proper reasons. It's only in such a situation where a person has gone through this process of hearing something and basically rejecting it, that person perhaps can be called the Rasha. The Chazon Ish says nowadays, based on the Gemara and Erechin, that there's nobody now who knows how to give tochacha, who can reprove other people. We, for whatever reason that is, but for the past couple thousand years, none of us have been able to give tochacha. And therefore, the Chazon Ish says that nobody has the status of a Rasha nowadays. And this has a lot of implications, which we won't get into right now. So that's just something to keep in mind. But let's, so that's one answer. So nowadays, it's very difficult to call anybody a Rasha, to say that these people should be hated, that they should be gone after. As an aside as well, you know, we all, I'll quote what was the name of Rabbi Saul Salanter as well, the idea that a lot of us, many of us, we're more concerned about our own gashmiut, our own physical needs, we're more concerned about our physical needs and other people's spirituality. It should be the exact opposite. We should worry first about ourselves and other people's spirituality comes after it. So that's just an aside. The idea of, in English, the English cliche that people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, that we have to make sure before we rise up that we're 100% perfect. Right? And this is one of, by the way, this is one of the criticisms of Pinchas, right? That Pinchas did a sui generis act. This was a unique action to go and kill somebody without going through the whole process of the deen, etc. And as we know, it was only for Pinchas that he could do it. So then one of the Chabad Chaim discusses this, the only reason Pinchas could quote-unquote get away with it, and only Pinchas, is because he really was perfect. Maybe one of those people who didn't really have anything that people could point to. But we all have our own issues. We all have our own problems. It's very difficult to say that we're so perfect ourselves that we have to start going after with vehemence other people and other communities with hatred. That's what it can often come to. The Gemara also tells us that I think a beautiful statement, Shlosha Kadosh Baruch Hu Ovan. There are three people or three types of people that a Kadosh Baruch Hu loves. Maybe there are others, but this is what the Gemara says, that at least three people. Misheino Koes, a person who doesn't get angry. Umisheino Mishtaker, a person who doesn't get drunk, meaning a person who stays in control. We know that a person who gets drunk loses control of his actions, and that's not the way we're supposed to live our lives. We're supposed to always be in control. So we don't get angry, don't get drunk. A person who is not so makpid, a person who is not so careful about his own kavod, who's ma'vir al midotav. He's able to transcend his own characteristics, his own ego, really. A person who's able to go beyond that. It brushes off from people who criticize him. Again, not constructive criticism. That's always good. We have to accept that. We believe in that, that if it's done from the proper place, we can learn from that. But people who say that just negative statements for negatives for their own sake, whatever the case is, or a person just is able to, doesn't have that ego. So this is the type of person, these three types of people, is a Kaddish, who a Kaddish Baruch Hu loves. And the Gemara continues that there are three people that a Kaddish Baruch Hu does not like so much. So one of them is Mendaber Achad Bepeh V'Achad Balev, a person who, again, is externally one way, will act very pious, observant, religious on the outside, but in the inside, his tocho is not kibaro. His inside does not match his external. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not like this type of person. And the second thing is that a person doesn't give edut when he's supposed to, doesn't give testimony when he can help the person. And the third is, if a person says a dvar erva, if a person sees that his friend, his acquaintance, somebody has done an immoral act, a sexually immoral act, umeid bo yechidi, and he comes and gives testimony by himself. What's this Gemara referring to? We know that in order to convict somebody, you have to have two witnesses. So there was only one witness. This witness saw it by himself. As anybody who's learned the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the halakha of testimony, knows that it's very strict laws of who can be a witness and what circumstances. But the fundamental has to be there have to be two people who see this. So this person knows he's the only person who saw this immoral action. And yet what does he do? He goes to Beit Din, he goes to the court of law, and he gives publicly this whole statement. He saw this person doing these immoral, these terrible things. The Gemara says the Kadosh Baruch Hu hates this person, does not like this person. Why? What's going on here? Because here there's no real constructive action that's going to happen from this. All that's going to happen, the person can't get convicted. The person, all that's going to happen is this person will have a terrible name now. The person will be told that everyone will know that this person, or there'll be the shame rod, this terrible name upon this person. So you see here the importance of preserving somebody's name, of not going after people just because you feel you have to get something off you. And it was a caveat that I'll just mention. I think Gemara, I think, is clearly only talking about a private matter. It's not talking about somebody who's a danger, chas v'shalom, or somebody who's a danger to society doing something. Then we have to come forth always, that's for sure. We're talking about here where there's no danger to anybody else here. If this person did something that was wrong between him and God, and because this person didn't like him or whatever the case is, he knew he couldn't get a conviction. He knew that nothing would happen. So he just is mulching on him. He just bears evil tales about this person. So this is this person will not find favor in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we mentioned that that when it comes to our characteristics, the way that we have to live our lives, as is well known from the Rambam, who perhaps was influenced by Aristotle, by others, as we know, going back in Greek philosophy, the idea of always walking in the middle path, right? That's the way that we have to live our lives. Never go to one extreme or the other. You shouldn't be a wild clown, but you're not supposed to be sad. You shouldn't, basically any characteristic that we have to always go into the middle path, except for two exceptions. What are those two exceptions? I'm sure many of you know this. The two exceptions to this are humility, right? And anger, right? Those are the two exceptions. And when it comes to anger, a person can never be angry, except the Gemara makes two exceptions, which Rambam codifies as well. The idea that a parent sometimes has to show anger to get a message across. And similarly, a teacher who has a wild group of kids has to sometimes exhibit anger. But again, it's only a show. It's a facade. It's only to drive a point home, but never to actually let anger take over that person. And this is related to humility as well, right? The idea that, as we know from Moshe, Ish Moshe Anav Mo'od Mo'od, that Moshe was a very, Mo'od Mo'od Hevei Shval Ruach, Moshe was a very humble person. And that's what we have to follow as well. We have to try to be humble. And these two often go together. A person who's humble generally doesn't get angry. Why do we often get angry? We feel somebody's impugned our honor, somebody's stepped on our feet, and we lose it. If we were humble, if we really, and again, humble does not mean to be a doormat. It doesn't mean that you let people walk over you. Hillel used to say when he came to the Beit Medrash, "Im ani kan hakol kan." If I'm here, everything is here. And Hillel, we know, was a very humble person. So what's going on here? Hillel recognized that he was a repository. He was of Torah. He was a great leader that people looked up to him. So he recognized that. But it wasn't as an egotistical statement. On the other hand, Hillel was able to transcend his own characteristics. He didn't do things for honor, for glory, etc. And that's why. And if a person who's like that, we know the famous story is of Hillel, when the carver comes to him and the bets that come. People try to make bets at Hillel's expense to get him angry. He never got angry because he was such a humble person. A person who's humble doesn't need to get angry, is confident in his or her skin, and doesn't need to show it. If somebody steps on their feet, it doesn't really bother them. We mentioned before that people often also, when they attack people, they attack other areas, they say, we're doing this l'shem shamayim. We're doing this for God's glory. We want to show what the Torah is really all about, that the Torah is pure. These people are impure. Look what they're doing to it. And it's important, therefore, to look at the way that the source for a machloka l'shem shamayim, which is, in, as we know, in Pirkei Avot, the third chapter of Pirkei Avot, the Ethics of the Fathers, the Mishnah says that there are two types of machlokim. There are two types of arguments that people can have. There's, again, the machlok l'shem shamayim. And what's the example given for that? Hillel and Shammai is the example of machlok l'shem shamayim. And then we have the machloket shelo l'shem shamayim, the machloket of who? Of Korach v'chol adato, right? Which right away tells us, gives us a sign of what a machloket is supposed to be and what it's not supposed to be like. When it comes to Korach, so there's no other side. It's Korach v'chol adato. Korach gathered. He was a rabble-rouser. He was able to gather at least 253 or 52 and maybe other people behind him. It was Korach v'chol adato. And as the Midrash says, they were fighting among themselves. They were fighting for no real reason. They just, for the sake of fighting, they were jealous of Moshe, of Aaron, of Elisaphan. They were jealous of all the different leaders of the Jewish people. And just to create problems, they started this whole machloket. They came up with as the Medrash says, they came up with all these crazy halachic questions, these pseudo-halachic questions to show that we're really religious, you see. We're just trying to, we don't think, Moshe, you're religious enough. We don't think that you're answering these questions appropriately. We're going to fight against you. But again, there was no partner, right? There was no second side. It was the Korach v'chol adato. Moshe didn't take any part in this. Aaron didn't take any part of it. They were attacked. They didn't respond because they knew there was nothing to respond to. That's, of course, the machloket l'shem shamayim. You see, you need dialogue in order to have a machloket l'shem shamayim, which is perfectly exemplified by Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai had some as an aside also, I mean, Hillel and Shammai themselves, by the way, didn't have so many arguments. As the Gemara points out, it was only when they had many, many students, and their students weren't so clear on what they said, didn't take proper notes, weren't so meticulous in listening to their Rebbes, to Hillel and Shammai, that you had all this multiplicity of arguments that came up in the next generations. But nevertheless, the Gemara does talk about Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as well. So we see here that that Hillel and Shammai, so they did have arguments themselves, but it was always in a kind way. It was always because they knew they were fighting. They knew Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. They knew that each person had the right intent, that they weren't at Stuchi and Apikoros just because they disagreed with them. And therefore, they got along to the point where even in those next generations, when Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had all types of arguments, halachic discussions, and things that had tremendous ramifications, not only for day-to-day practice of how we do certain things, but it had a relation to who we count as a Jew. Right? The Gemara in Yavama talks about different machlokim that we have, and these had serious ramifications. How do we count who is a Jew? And yet the Gemara in that place tells us that what? It tells us two different times that lo nimnu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel to get married to each other. That they did not stop their children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren from marrying one another, because they knew that even though they had these very difficult discussions and arguments on halacha, but it wasn't a personal attack. It wasn't a personal argument. And therefore, they knew that even though the ramifications were serious, they didn't say, you're not Jewish enough for me. You're not Jewish enough for me. I'm not going to let you get married. I have my book where I'm going to show that, you know, anybody from Beit Shammai is cut out of the Jewish people. That never happened. The same Gemara, after this, describes, though, why do we generally go after Beit Hillel when it comes to Psak Halacha? When how do we act? So generally, as we know, there sometimes we do follow Shammai or Beit Shammai, but that's rare. But generally, we follow the Psak, the decisions of Beit Hillel. Why is that? So the Gemara says, Mipnei Shenochin Va'aluvin, because these people were Noach, they were kind, they were good. Va'aluvin, again, they never embarrassed somebody else. They would rather be embarrassed themselves. They were meek in a positive sense, like tmimim, pure. Vayushonim divreham v'divrei Beit Shammai. They would always, when they were discussing something or recounting a machloket, they would always say what Beit Shammai said. They would always give the other side and their side. V'lo'od, and even more than this, ela shemakdimin divrei Beit Shammai l'divreham. The real mark of the proper intention of Beit Hillel was that they would first mention Beit Shammai. We know often when we have arguments nowadays, people, they'll ignore the other side. They won't listen to the other side. And if they do, perhaps hear it, they'll never quote the other side. They won't give them any kavod. They won't give them respect. And this, of course, is absolutely antithetical to the way that Beit Hillel acted and the way that halacha is like Beit Hillel. The Gemara is telling us here, when we have an argument, again, and l'shem shemayim, it means that we discuss in a proper way. That it's a dialogue. It's not just me attacking another side. I have a dialogue with another side. I always have to give k'dima. I give honor to the other side. I mention, I'm not scared of them. Right? That's really what this is coming to tell us also. I'm confident in my opinion. I'm not scared. I can, like the Rashi tells us by Areya Prazim, the Rashi tells us that when it comes to the Meraglim, when the Meraglim came to the land of Israel, so they were given a sign, they were told that if it's an Areya Prazim, that if it's an open city, it's a non-fortified city, you know these people are strong. You know these people, because why? They're not worried. They're confident in themselves. They're not worried. They don't need to build a fortress. Nobody scares them from outside. People can come into their city, and they know that they can live their life as their own lives without worrying about anything else. And the same is true when it comes to religious life as well, that if we're confident enough in our own positions, and Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, that Shivim Payim LeTorah, that there are different ways to approach the Torah, we're not scared. If somebody gives a proper opinion. If somebody gives an opinion with sources, again, I'm not talking about something that just comes out of the blue, but something that has some sources, that has a tradition to it, that the person is not just doing this to as a negative way. We can accept that position. We can disagree with it, and we can disagree vehemently. The milchamta shel Torah. The Torah is called, the discussion can be a milchama, it can be a war. You look at the, going back hundreds of years, sometimes it does seem a little too much, the arguments between whether it's the language of the Ravid against the Rambam, or the Baal HaMeor and the Ramban. You do have some very sharp language among great rabbis and great decisors, but it's generally the mark of a great rabbi is that they're not threatened by this other person, that they can, again, that they can really, they can accept this, they can hear from them, and they can still keep their opinion 100% as well, or listen, and be open to listening to another opinion as well. And the Gemara continues that after this idea that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were able to get along, that they were able to marry each other, l'lamedcha shechiba v'reyut no'agim zeh b'zeh, to tell us that chiba, friendliness, v'reyut, again, another achiba is more like love, reyut is like a friend, the reyim ahuvim, we're going back to Gan Eden, the idea of real unity between Beit Shammai and Hillel, that existed, even though, again, they had all these arguments. And this comes to fulfill the pasuk of ha'emet v'ha'shalom ehavu, that you can have emet, right? We sometimes say, how can you have truth, that you can't have truth and shalom and peace. One has to be at the expense of the other. And the pasuk and the Gemara here tells us that that's not true, that you can have emet and shalom, you can have truth, you can have peace together. If you have people like Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai who have no personal negiyot, who have no personal, they're not trying to get anything from this, but they're pure-hearted when it comes to their opinions in Torah. You can have emet and shalom. We can go, generally as a Jewish people, after Beit Hillel. We can fulfill their psak, but we also have shalom. We also don't reject Beit Shammai. We don't call them apikorsim. We don't call them stukim. They're still in the parsha of the Jewish people. They're still in the Jewish people. Another lesson that we have to learn, besides just, again, doing much more on the Bein Adam Lechavero, of accepting other people, of not always being ready to attack, and clearly not having anger. Right? Anger is what, as I mentioned, the Gerat HaRamban, that he quotes there, that the anger puts a person into Gehenna, a person who loses control and gets angry, falls into Gehenna. That's the worst thing. He gives a number of different phrases of how terrible anger is. So if we're able to transcend the feelings of anger, if we all, on a collective level, when we hear something, we do as our mothers told us, to count to 10 before we scream out, that's the way we rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Again, to have the lack of the anger, the lack of ego that we have. And similarly, in order to build up on the Bein Adam Lechavero, to build up on to create a more harmonious society that we have, to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, to rebuild Yerushalayim, to not repeat the sins of the people who lived in Bayit Sheni, those of the Netziv, who are Kadosh Baruch Hu Eino Sovel, who can't tolerate these type of people. Another important thing is to be Dan Lekav Zchut, as we know, to give people the benefit of the doubt. And this is very hard. We know it's hard. The Gemara in Shabbat tells us a number of very extreme stories about people who gave the benefit of the doubt. It tells a story of somebody who worked for many, I think 3 years. He worked for his employer, did backbreaking work, was expecting to get money to go back to his family. At the end of, I think, the 3 years, he was told by his employer he doesn't have the money, that he can't pay him. And the Gemara says that this person went bepachei nefesh. He went very depressed back home, but didn't do anything. He didn't argue. He didn't create a ruckus. And this is an extreme story. And it's hard for us to hear this type of story and to really think people can be like this. The Gemara then continues that a little while later, I think it was after Pesach, the employer came with three donkeys laden with all types of goods, paid him the money, and said to him, you know, what did you think when I told you I didn't have money? And the person was Dan Lekav Zchut. The person gave a whole series of things to explain away why this employer wouldn't have paid him the money. And the employer said, you know, you're right. That's exactly what happened. My money was tied up. I couldn't pay you, and now I'm giving to you. The Gemara then tells two stories which relate more to rabbis and what seems like immoral actions on their parts, that they went to certain women, and their talmidim were looking at this, and they came out, and things did not look very good for these rabbis. And again, the rabbis say to them, what did you think when I went into this room, when I went to this place, what was going on? And again, the talmidim, the students, were done lekafsut. They said, it must have been that you had dealings with the government, with other things, that all types of different ideas, which these rabbis said, that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And because you're done the kafsut, because you find merit in what I did, you're not ready to jump to conclusions, to always find the negative within me, so a Kadosh Baruch Hu will also be done you the kafsut. That mida connected mida, that God will look upon you favorably as well, and not jump to conclusions to punish you right away, right? This is, Rav Soloveitchik talks about this with the whole idea of the Seirim, right? The two goats that we send, one we sacrifice, one we send to the Azazel on Yom Kippur, the idea that we turn to God and we say, all of life is like a lottery. How can you blame us? You have to be down the kafsut. You have to realize we're not perfect. We're not, and have rachamim and have compassion upon us. So that's this midah keneged midah. If we give people the benefit of the doubt, God will give us the benefit of the doubt. And this is actually something the Maharal says in regard to the Beit HaMikdash, in regards to the destruction of the temple. The Gemara says that there are a lot of reasons the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So one of the others is that we were not done lifnim mishurat hadin, that we didn't go the extra yard, we didn't give people that benefit of the doubt, that when we judge people really at the letter of the law, right? If somebody was guilty, we didn't have any compassion upon them. Again, within the judicial system, there's no room for chicanery. There's no room to say, I'm going to have compassion when it's the two litigants. But if a person is guilty of something on a civil matter, society should have compassion on that person. We don't necessarily believe in three strikes and you're out. In any event, the Maharal says that why does the Gemara say because the Jewish people, they kept strict law that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? So the Maharal explains that our whole existence with God, the Jewish people, is predicated on rachamim, is predicated on compassion, on being lifnim mishurat hadin. What are we, right? We know we're not perfect. We've done I don't have to go into it. I mentioned before, we've done a lot of the not great things as a Jewish people. That's why we still are here in 2009. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, generally, if we're kind to other people, midah keneged midah, God will be kind to us. But in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, when the Jews didn't have compassion for others, when they were only justice, so God said to them, okay, if that's the way you guys want to operate, if you want to operate on a purely natural system of law where only justice will apply, nature takes over, as it were. There's no room for compassion, the human interaction here. God says, you know what? I'm going to allow nature to take its course. I'm going to allow justice to take its course. And in that course of nature, the course of the world, you as a tiny little Jewish people are clearly going to get wiped out by the Romans. You have no way you're going to stand. The only reason that you were able to sustain yourselves is because I was with you, because I looked favorably upon you, because you were favorable to one another. But the Maharal says, as soon as that stopped, then God, as it were, took his hashkacha off. He took his haster panim. He turned away from the Jewish people. He let nature take its course, and that's what happens. When nature takes its course, we don't have much of a chance against the outside world. So to sum up and conclude, so it can be depressing on the one hand to look at all these different problems and to look at the world that we have nowadays, that we read about constant fighting, infighting, and we talk about unity, but we know, unfortunately, it's more lip service than really anything else. And the fact that we have Tisha B'Av year after year and we say the same words over and over again. So it can be very depressing, but it really doesn't have to be. I think really if all of us, and again, very much to myself as well, if we all, before we start attacking other people, before we get angry with other people, we really stop and think, you know what? Do I need to do this? Do I have to repair a little bit what I am in life before I start attacking other people? Can I find merit in other people? Can I be dan lekav zchut? Somebody whose religious outlook may be a little different than mine. But they're sincere. Right? These people are sincere. They're trying. So instead of attacking them, instead of fighting against them violently, maybe I have to reach out to them a little bit more. Maybe with kindness, with chesed. They'll go a lot further, right? Golrech mentioned the idea of Kiruv. I don't know anybody, or very few people who came to Kiruv, who came to Jewish Judaism because they were screamed at and told you're terrible and what you're doing is terrible. And again, this applies even more so, people within the fold, people who already have, who are 9/10 of the way there or 7/10 of the way there. It's much easier to get them to go to the extra mile than start with somebody who's at 1/10 or 0/10. So if we can all just really individually, and like I said, if we all individually really try better to be kinder to other people, to not get angry with other people, to find, to be dan lekav zchut, there's no reason this has to go on. I don't know if it's going to happen overnight. It may take a long time, but we have to speak up. This doesn't mean that when there is real injustice that we tolerate that, right? That the psukim I mentioned before about real resha, about real evil, whether that's people who take it to do terrible things to other people, who take advantage of other people, that you have to stand up for. You can't. That's exactly what the first Gemara I mentioned refers to, that if you see injustice taking place, you can't just sit quietly by like the Rabbanan did in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, so people will say, they must agree that it's okay. They must not be bothered by it. So when real resha, and again, we don't have time to describe how to find that, what exact, you know, some people, what we call resha, other people might call something else. Okay, we have to be honest with ourselves. You know, what's real evil? You know, what's real evil? What do we think is evil because we're not confident or whatever the case is? So, but at least if we can use these, starting again with ourselves, within our family and with our friends, and always being cognizant that people do look at us as Jews, that people watch our actions, whether that's fair or not fair, we have to make sure that we're Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, that people will look at us and say, how wonderful are these people? I just want to really conclude by saying that, as you mentioned, you know, we just had the Shloshim for my father, and that is something that we all tremendously learned from my father, that his tolerance of other people, that his openness of always taking a happy and a cheerful side, an optimistic side towards people. And thank God he was very successful in reaching out to many, many people and to making people, many people, much more observant without judging them per se, always reaching out. So hopefully in that zchut, myself, my family, and all of us, that we really can make sure that the words that we say today and that we give it Bar Torah about the Beit HaMikdash being rebuilt, that we really mean them and we all are taking practical action to ensure that will come to fruition.